Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 451, the box office report for the week ending February 10th, 2019.
Broadcasting from a radioactive bunker deep inside the bracket compound, this is Real Spoilers, episode 451, the box office report.
I don't have a cool place. I have a basement. The bedroom that I sleep in during the day is where I'm recording from.
So the weather has messed with us, and we are all via Skype. So if you thought we talked over each other a lot before...
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Yes, you are in for a treat.
Or Kevin is, I guess, when he has to edit this.
Oh, man. I say, you know what? Maybe when someone's done making a point of talking or something, we could just leave a little pause. That way in editing, I can delete the pauses, but it won't sound like a cluster of everyone on top of each other.
We should do it like an audio commentary where we say our name first and then continue with whatever our thought was.
It shows our age difference. I was going to be like, it could be like a CB, like, you know, like, I think this movie should have made more money. Over.
That's a good 10-4, buddy.
Oh, boy.
So I guess we should go around our metaphorical table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And just some quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you like what you hear, even when we have to do it on Skype, you can swing by there and leave us a review. It's very helpful. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers and join the League of Show Sharers. People who were kind enough to join the league this week: Lane LeVanway, Librarian Cynthia, Griffin Fox Smith, Ralph Tribble, Travis Tewitt, Chris James, Julianne Jordan, Tom Comiskey, Brent Smith, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Ron Johnson, Chris Sanders, Timmy Two Zunes, Chris Magic Man, Tammy Sherman Powers, and Jason Weese. So thank you very much to you guys for sharing the most recent episodes. And also don't forget our Patreon account. Look at that, Kevin. I remembered without you giving me a look.
Yeah, I'm over there in like my ghost like force form over there just to give me this like the evil eye.
Yeah, side eye. Don't forget Patreon. Patreon.com/realspoilers, where you get all sorts of bonus content for the low price of $5 a month, and it helps to cover just our cost, hosting and microphones and Skype connections.
We're going to need them.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, all you non-Patreon people, you should thank the Patreon people for the very existence of this episode.
Exactly. I just had to buy a couple of cables because we're going to start doing more video stuff, a little preview of things to come. But we set up a new TV in the war room, and we have a webcam in there. And anyway, to do all the wiring, we needed to buy two extra cables, and it was only like $25. But I mean, that's exactly what the Patreon covers, is expenses for this show. It's not like the Patreon is just supporting that show. We do that to get money for this one and make this one happen.
Yeah. So and we have some exciting things planned for our Skype and future guests, and
we do.
It might benefit you to be a Patreon subscriber.
Maybe.
Just, speaking of that, Joe and I, on the last episode, we reviewed Polar, the Mads Mikkelsen, not John Wick movie on Netflix. But on that episode, we gave a little hint and a little preview to some of the things to come. So if you subscribe, go get started there. There's a backlog of episodes, reviews, commentaries. And on the last episode, we talk about a little bit of what's coming up.
A little sneak peek, if you will.
Well, don't make it sound dirty.
Oh, it's, all right. We don't. Our moral compass isn't here, so it's game on.
That is true. So,
oh yeah, Patreon is also unedited. So for
oh yeah, yeah, I should say that. That's fair.
It is. Yeah, if you like real spoilers after dark, then you're in for a treat.
Yeah. Especially when watching Polar.
Especially when Joe's mic goes out.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So anyway, that's what we do on Patreon, and you can get a little sneak peek of things to come and many more exciting things in 2019 happening.
Awesome. Yeah. There's all of that. I guess we will now turn our eyes to the box office, I will assume. Kevin has his advocates at the ready, Kevin.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on over here. But no, wait a minute.
I will say it's nice to be able to do this in shorts and no shoes.
That's all. I haven't been able to experience that before.
It's nice to have to see you in shorts and
thank you very much. Yes, that's cool.
keep your hobbit feet over there, Joe. Yeah.
You know, you're not the first person to say that about my feet. So,
well, you are Italian, so
Yeah.
I can only
feet. I don't know. What to do. Yeah.
Well, anyway, yes, I have my backup abacai.
Correlation is true, by the way.
Oh, okay. Hobbit anyway, yeah, Italians and hobbit feet. Yeah, we know.
Totally legit. We have hair on our toe knuckles.
So the abacus is warmed up over here. I've always got my backup, luckily. And so this weekend, the movie of the week is number one, but geez, it has fallen far from expectations. Analysts and the studio were expecting $50 million from the Lego Movie 2, and it only opened to 30.5. What happened?
That is so weird. People love the first one. And while I will say, you know, we'll get into it on the next episode, I don't think it was as good as the first one. I certainly think it was good.
I think it was on par with the first one.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. But it was not like this wasn't Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. You know,
but you're coming off of one, a successful, like, an extremely successful, you know, movie that kicked off this whole franchise. And also you have all the properties, you have, you know, you still have Batman, you have all these new characters, all the stuff you see in the previews. Like, I cannot see what would keep parents and kids away from this movie over the weekend.
I mean, it's not going up against anything either. I mean, Aquaman has had its time in the sun, I guess, so to speak. I mean, so it's not like Aquaman was taking money away from this, and there's not another kids movie out right now.
No, nothing. There's nothing on the whole box office that would have stolen it away. I mean, this movie is number one, but yeah, it's not sharing it with anyone. So it's just crazy that people didn't turn out. Do you think it's possible that the reviews, because while people are saying that the movie is good, like it's getting decent reviews, but a lot of people are saying, you know, it's good, but it's not for kids. Like the story goes over their head. Like it really, there isn't a lot in it for kids. Do you think that
I will could say be... I took my daughter and she wasn't a huge fan. Like, I really enjoyed it, but she was not into it. I mean, she was into it, but she, when we walked out, she said, it was fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, she walks out of Lego Batman or the first Lego movie, and it's, you know, she's bouncing around talking about it.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. You know, opening weekend, you'd think that people would just go no matter what, but I wonder if some of the word of that from critics is scared. It's just a bizarre thing.
I wonder if the Chris Pratt thing hurts it.
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, but, the time, her timing couldn't have been any better. Or worse, depending on who you talk to. And if you don't know what we're talking about, Ellen Page calling him out on Twitter for his church and things like that. So, I mean, she timed it right. Like, if Chris Pratt's going to get any press, right now is the time.
I think you could make the argument that that could also have the inverse reaction of the other end rallying around him and going to the box.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Especially since his face isn't on the screen and it's just voice work. I think it's really easy for people to just kind of go, it's a cartoon, and just blow right by that one way or the other.
Do you think in this current climate that even if he is just doing a voice, that isn't as serious as his face being on, you know, front and center?
I just don't think that this I don't know, scandal, topic, whatever you want to call it.
I would call it a topic. I mean, it's not.
I don't think that it's really impacted the public that much. I mean, honestly, like, I've seen more discussion about Liam Neeson's comments than I have about Chris Pratt.
That's probably true.
I haven't seen any backlash over this. I've seen articles and things, but I haven't seen any specific backlash over Pratt. The thing that's interesting about this, too, so the deal is that basically Chris Pratt is super religious. Everyone knows this. He talks about God. He talks about his faith all the time. I mean, he is a very religious, church-going person. And for the most part, unless you're a part of very modern, like, you know, faiths and Christianity, I mean, most churches are anti-gay, not in a Westboro Baptist way, but if you are religious, most of them do not support LGBT. So, like, I don't even know that this is a headline. They basically just said Chris Pratt goes to church.
Well, I think what Ellen Page said is that he donates money to this church, that the church supports conversion therapy. And that's kind of where...
Currently, or it has in the past?
That I cannot answer. I don't know.
Because the article read made it sound like... It used to, or it, you know, like it was phrased in a way that made it sound like it was a past tense thing.
Oh, well, that's very possible. But even the mention of conversion therapy at this point is like, you know, that's red flag big time. If a person is donating money to a church that supports that kind of idiotic thing.
Yeah, the thing is, though, like Tom was saying earlier, I don't think that this is the Lego movie. This is a kid's movie.
Sure,
kids love Legos.
Sure.
Kids love these characters. They love the first movie. Like, I just don't see them telling Timmy, like, we're not going because Chris Pratt, one of the voice actors that you've never heard of in this movie, goes to church. Like, you know, I don't think this has any bearing on it. I really don't.
Again, I don't think it was the going to church. It was the donating of money to the church that was the issue.
Well, of course. No. I just mean, like, they're not explaining that to six-year-old Timmy.
Sure.
Like,
no, totally.
Like, I what I'm saying is that if Chris Pratt had personally done something, if he had showed up at a Westboro Baptist rally, like, if he had done that, it's a whole different
story. Are
those guys
still a thing? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, they're always a thing.
All right. But I know that what's her name booked.
And she it's was getting...
Till that dad dies is my guess.
Didn't the dad die?
Did he?
I think the old man's dead.
It's still around.
Their presence is definitely getting smaller, but they still show up at things. I mean,
what's her name just left? Like 3 years ago, like the one that was front and center.
They talked to Kevin Smith.
Megan. Yes.
Yeah.
Watch her TED Talk. Her TED Talk's pretty interesting, honestly.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, so there's not really a scandal here. I don't think that. I mean, you know, they're you could definitely start to make it into something, but I don't think that it has even reached the point to where the mainstream would be boycotting it or not taking their kids to this. So it's just a really weird thing. I mean, maybe the weather, maybe because we've had such crappy weather lately. I just don't know.
I don't think the box office lives or dies on the Midwest.
No, but I mean, there's been a lot of stuff with the weather. I mean, everywhere. I mean, we've had it really bad. But I don't know. It's just a strange thing. I mean, to come in $20 million under expectations, this is almost 50%.
It's a lot
less.
It's a big chunk of money.
It's a huge amount. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. We'll see what continues to happen, and I don't know if we'll have a boost the second week or if whatever
there's nothing. There's again no kids movies for a while, but. The market's going to get split because you're going to have a bunch of big budget stuff coming out shortly. So like this is kind of its only window to make that money. And if it can't make that money in the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to get lost in the shuffle, unfortunately.
Yeah. We'll have to see what happens. I don't have any overseas number on this yet. So, I mean, for now it's 30.5 million opening weekend. And I don't even have a budget on it yet. So I don't know if there's one floating around there somewhere, but definitely not what they were expecting. So we'll see what happens. Number two, What Men Want. That's the remake of What Women Want with Mel Gibson back in a couple decades ago.
That was a couple decades ago.
It was a long time ago when you think about it.
Before he went, you know, off the deep end. Well, before we knew, he went off the deep end. Yeah,
exactly. 18.5 million is that one. So definitely counter programming. They've been advertising that as the girls' night out movie. Definitely adults, women, heavy on the advertising. I've seen a lot of theater chains, you know, say get your tickets for girls' night, this, that, and the other. So it's the number two again with 18.5 million. It only had a $20 million budget. So It's already getting there, and I'm sure with word of mouth and people seem to be enjoying it, it will continue to be around for a while. Did you see it, Tom? Okay. I didn't see it either. Joe, I'm presuming you didn't see it.
No, I did not.
There is a review up. We had a guest reviewer on ReviewSTL.com. So if you want to check it out, they really enjoyed it. So if you want to read about that, you can check it out there. But coming in at number three is the movie that everyone has been hearing about in the press and not for the reasons that the studio wants. Cold Pursuit came in at 10.25 million. That's the one starring Liam Neeson seeking revenge on a snowplow. And I know Tom did see this one.
I did see it. And it is not what that trailer makes it look like.
Oh, really?
It's very episodic. It has a sprawling cast with tons of characters that follow different storylines. Liam Neeson disappears from this film for large portions of it.
I'm sure the producers are thankful for that.
Yeah, it's not really he's not really necessarily the driving force of the movie, even though it starts with, you know, his son being killed by gangster types in some sort of a convoluted drug heist, and he decides he's going to go and get revenge. But have you ever seen? Did either of you guys watch MASH very much?
No,
I mean, I would catch episodes every once in a while. Yeah.
Do you remember the episode of MASH where it was like, I think it was like Hawkeye wanted, like, he needed like a winter coat or long johns or something, and he like, and he's trying to barter for them. And so, like, somebody wants to go to the dentist, and so he goes to make a deal with the dentist, but the dentist needs a pass to Tokyo. So then he goes to Henry Blake to get the pass to Tokyo, but then Henry needs Mark. And they do all these things.
This does sound vaguely familiar. Yeah,
and then at the end, like, the one linchpin, like, gets pulled, and it all falls like dominoes.
Yes, yes, so, I remember this episode.
This movie is like that, but with dead bodies. And so when when he kills the two people, it sparks basically like a mob war, and they start killing each other off. And I will say, it, like, the movie has an odd tone, and it wasn't until about halfway through the movie that I figured out, I think this movie wants to be funny.
No.
Yeah, like a dark comedy, like funny in the way Pulp Fiction could be funny.
Okay. Like Fargo?
Yeah, or Fargo. Like, that's another good example. And so, like, I think it was trying to be, like, a really dark comedy. But the tone didn't really convey that until, like, you started to get deeper in the movie and you realize, like, oh, this is a running gag that it's basically like a series of vignettes that always ends with somebody dying. And then they put
that
sounds
up very much like Fargo.
They put up their name, and they all have like mob nicknames like Speedo or whatever. And
I don't want to know how that guy got that name.
Yeah. And
I heard he has hobbit feet too.
Hey now.
There's this running gag of like whenever somebody dies on the screen, you get like their name, their nickname, and then it will put like a cross, and then it becomes kind of a joke because like they're dealing with like an Indian tribe, and so you'll get like a symbol for that or like all
it
this.
Sounds like Smoke and Aces.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've never seen Smoke and Aces.
Oh, do yourself a favor.
But I will say that, like, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but so many people die in this movie that the end credits actually list the actors in order of disappearance.
And that's kind of genius.
That's not a joke that, like, I made up. That's a true thing.
And I was about to give Tom an award when he told me that joke. And he said, no, I can't accept this.
Yeah, I know. When I got out of the movie, I was messaging Kevin, and I was just like, just FYI, I know that sounds like the sort of joke I would tell, and I'm flattered, but it was not mine. So I will say that one joke kind of made me reappraise the movie a little bit. But
yeah.
But it never really worked for me. Like, I I like the idea of it. Like talking about it, I like it a lot better than I did actually watching it.
Okay. So, with his comments just recently, who's the guy that does the Daily Show now?
Trevor Noah.
I won't repeat what he said because I will never be able to do it justice. But he gave a really eloquent response as to like what he said as to what Liam Neeson said. Right. So do yourself a favor and go find. It's like he works the crowd himself in between commercial breaks.
Yeah, I've seen this a little bit lately. I forget there was something else he was talking about that it was basically just him kind of
riffing.
Yeah, and like riffing makes it sound like he's trying to be funny, haha, but really more just him kind of like waxing poetic on a topic during the commercial break. And not to say that there aren't humorous comments in there, but it's not just like him sitting there trying to cut up either.
He's not reading off a cue card.
Right.
Like he's just doing himself basically. Right. He's just, you know. But then
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying he gives a really good, basically he says if that had been anybody else that said that, it would have been, you know, brushed away. But since it's the guy from Taken, like it, I think people take it out of context a little more because he portrays such a badass on screen that maybe when he says, I want to walk down the street with a crowbar and just beat up a black dude, people take that a little bit more literally when the guy from Taken says it.
Yeah. And go ahead.
This is great. I know. So Terry Crews actually tweeted something about it, and which I thought was interesting, and because he was like, you know, this guy is talking about he came to a fork in the road, and he could have gone one way or the other, and he went the other, and I mean, I know it's easy for me to, you know, look past it because I'm a white guy, and so I don't have to live in that world, or at least not in the dangerous end of that world. Right. And so like, I'm aware of that, but I will also say that, like, I mean, the guy saying I could have been that guy and I made a choice not to be that guy. And sometimes you just have to step back and be like, is this the person I want to be and behave differently? And it was an ugly place that he was in, but he did not stay in that place.
No, and I mean, I get the reaction from a point of anger. Like, he was angry, and he didn't know what to do with it. And you're right, he could have made a choice and went option A or option B, and luckily he chose the option A, which was the way to go.
I want to talk about the movie and the box office effect, or the effects it had on the box office. This is the guy that, you know, back in 2009 did Taken before anyone knew what it was, and Taken made $24.7 million. Taken 2 made $49 million. Nonstop made $28 million. Taken 3 made $39 million. I'm trying to see if the commuter made...
Wait, which was Taken 3?
Oh, I'm guessing...
Was that when the daughter and the wife get taken?
Sure, probably.
Or is there a point where he gets taken and they help him?
That should be four.
I have no idea. But
these numbers you're giving, Kevin, are opening weekend numbers, not total.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Because thank you, just against the opening weekend of this one. Right. And even the movie The Commuter, which was totally different, but I mean, you know, from the Taken stuff, like it was that weird train movie that we covered, but it opened to $13.7 million. And here we have Cold Pursuit only opening to $10.2 million. So it's like, I have to say that press junket thing, I think, really had an effect on this movie.
It's hard. It's hard to say because I still don't feel like that really broke through to become a full-fledged scandal. I mean, it probably took a bite, but I also feel like there's some of it of people that are just kind of like, I've seen this movie now. Like, I mean, Liam Neeson in a movie like this has become a punchline.
Sure.
And I think that people are just kind of getting kind of tired of it. And I think that was one of the mistakes they made with the marketing of this movie is they went the safe route and went like, hey, it's Taken on a snowplow. And one, I think people thought that was ridiculous because ultimately the snowplow plays like very little role in the movie. It's not like he's really like consistently using it as a weapon or something. He just happens to be a guy that drives a snowplow in a mountain town, you know?
Right.
That trailer made it look like an elevator pitch of Taken on a snowplow. And I think people were just kind of like, that's ridiculous. And and we've seen this movie a million times, and you've run out of permutations, and I'm out. And I think, but I also will say, I think the comments that he made, anybody that was like on the fence but leaning towards no, I think it's real easy to just be like, and no,
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, it's tough, I'm sure, for any actor who wants to have some sort of an honest persona. Because everything they say is going to be scrutinized down to the letter, and maybe they can't be as honest as they want to be anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, just, I mean, he was just answering a question. Like, I feel like he was telling, not that I'm not defending him, but he was telling a story that came from somewhere pretty, you know, that we hadn't heard before, or somewhere from pretty deep inside of him. And well, the headline says, you know, Liam Neeson wants to beat up a black dude with a crowbar.
Yeah. And this movie's entirely about bloodlust and a thirst for vengeance. And so I think he's trying to say, like, hey, I've been in a place that this character was at, to where, like, I had, you know, I had this desire, and then when cooler heads prevailed, I was like, that was dumb.
Right, right. And unfortunately, it cost him at the box office. But yeah. Or did it, you know, like, this will have a life on VOD and DVD, just like everything else, you know. I don't think these movies that he makes don't lose money, do they?
I mean, I don't think they generally do. He does not. They're not necessarily huge budget movies, but I really think that it tipped the scales, like Tom said. And you know, I feel like there's a crowd out there that I don't think the Lego Movie audience is necessarily the same crowd. And you had the Girls' Night Out movie, and so I think if you wanted to go see an action movie on a Friday night, I think this would have been it. And you know, it may not lose money in the long run, but I definitely can't see this having legs as it goes forward.
And I thought he was retiring from action movies. Wasn't that the deal?
Well, you know, here's the thing. This isn't really an action movie. Like, if you see the movie, now I get that you don't get that because the trailer doesn't convey that, you know, but this really isn't an action movie. Like, I at the beginning, I was even like, even when he does have, you know, is killing somebody or whatever, like, there's not a whole lot of, like, choreographed fight scenes. Like, there's sometimes where it just kind of pans away. Right. And I was just like, is he so old he can't do this anymore?
Maybe.
And I mean, there is that thing on, I mean, they've always worked around his age. There's that clip on YouTube, and it's something like 27 edits for Liam Neeson to jump a fence. Yeah. And and it, like, you don't realize it when you're watching the movie, because it's from, like, I think Taken 2 or 3, because the movie is very stylized and,
right,
and shaky cam. But, like, you just see this clip, and it's like 15 seconds long of him jumping a fence, and there are so many edits in it. It's brutal.
That's funny.
And when you just see it and just isolated like that, you're like, this is ludicrous.
At this point, they're just going to have him run through the fence.
Yeah.
Well,
but that's not what this movie is. This movie isn't an action movie. It's kind of a dark comedy, revenge, Fargo-esque thriller of sorts. And it's not really living and dying on, you know, on action.
Yeah, it's all perception.
That's what The Commuter was.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but yeah, this movie, like Tom said, it's being painted as the studio is got nervous with their tracking and how they thought it would perform. And so they thought their best bet to make money was to edit it into Taken 4. And that's not what it is. So it's a bait and switch anyway, but people are expecting action. And then I think it did go the other way where, you know, a lot of people are sick of it by now too. So it's just a mess. The whole thing is kind of a mess. I mean, where did you land on it, Tom? Was it okay, or where?
It was okay. Like, I if I stumbled across it again, I wonder if I would have a different reaction, kind of knowing what it's trying to do. I do wonder if this is a movie that will find a second life on home video, just because people will stumble across it thinking it's a Taken knockoff, and when they realize it's not, you know, they might find that refreshing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Speaking of editing, real quick, have you guys seen the video on Bohemian Rhapsody about editing?
No.
No.
So it's interesting. So Bohemian Rhapsody is nominated for a ton of Oscars. It's also winning awards left and right, and there's a lot of people upset, whether it be Bryan Singer, you know, people mad at Bryan Singer, or just saying, like, you know, it's an entertaining movie, but it's not the best movie of the year, so on and so forth. But so there's a clip from Bohemian Rhapsody when they're meeting with, like, you know, the character that Littlefinger plays, and the whole band is sitting around at lunch and they're having a discussion, and the editing in this clip is atrocious. Like, it just won Best Editing at an awards presentation, you know, from some group. And, like, there's this clip going around where they have to cut it. Talk about Liam Neeson jumping a fence. Like, this lunch scene has more cuts in it, and they're just sitting at a table. Like, every time someone speaks or, like, looks at a person, they have to cut to them. So, like, instead of holding on the person for more than one line of dialogue, it is, like, it's, like, talk, cut, talk, cut, talk, cut. And, like, it like, gives you a seizure looking at it, because when you're looking at how much it jumps around, like, it really was giving me a headache. So,
Was that in the movie?
Yeah, it's a scene from the movie. It's not like a parody thing. It's like literally a scene from it. I guess someone edited a screener or whatever that they got. But it's bad. It's really bad as far as editing goes. And like,
I don't understand how that is getting as much praise. I mean, like, look, I dug the movie. It was fun. But I don't like, and as far as awards go, I do believe that Rami Malek deserves to be nominated for Best Actor. But other than that, I don't get it. I don't get how much money they dumped into making sure this thing is where it is. It has no business being in any of these categories except for Rami Malek.
I agree with you. I think that it was entertaining. I think there's a lot of problems with it. It's definitely not the best movie, and there's a lot of competition out there. But I think it comes to exactly what you said. I think their people wined and dined. They gave the Hollywood Foreign Press a ton of money and gifts and trips and presents, and I think they're just going all out on it. And it's just becoming kind of this like popularity award overall for all the things it's now made on. It made a ton of money. People love the music of Queen, but it's like, that's what the movie is. Like, without that music, it's not like the movie did anything phenomenal. It's like, yeah, it has great music.
I think Dan compared it to, it's like a dude's version of Mamma Mia, you know? And that's what it is. And I made that comparison. Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. But like,
even down to in the first Mamma Mia, at the end, they're like, hey, here are three songs we didn't cram into the movie.
Right.
We're just going to stand here and sing them. And like that, I mean, that's what this movie does, right? They're like, hey, here's 20 minutes of Live Aid.
Right.
You know,
here's, we missed here's We Are the Champions. Here, we'll throw that in there real quick.
But here's the thing, too. And how many Oscars is Mamma Mia nominated for?
Meryl Streep, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a couple
songs. I just assume that she gets nominated no matter what.
Right. But that's the thing, though. So it's like this. That's the problem. And it's a shame that it's getting so much backlash. And if listeners liked it, that's not the problem. And I think everything on the everyone on the podcast, I think, enjoyed it for the most part. But there's a difference between a movie that is enjoyable, entertaining, does a good job, you know, with keeping your attention, uses the already established great music well, and then being the best film of the year, the best performance, the best editing, the best direct. It's like there's a difference.
There's Tom Sawyer book, and then there's the gold key version of Tom Sawyer. You know, like that's what this is.
Same movie with all the same story, but they subbed in the music of like Nickelback.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Somebody would be walking out of this movie saying it's amazing.
No.
I don't even say it to be like, oh, we're making fun of Nickelback. But I'm just saying, like, if you took out the music of Queen, or even put in a better classic rock band from that, or a different classic rock band from that.
Easy group, Lemon Squeezy.
Yeah. Like, let's say it was like the music of Styx.
Yeah.
You know, I like Styx. But I don't think for the average consumer, you can go as deep on Styx.
REO Speedwagon.
Yeah, you could go as deep on Styx or REO Speedwagon songs. If you subbed in REO Speedwagon songs, they wouldn't be walking out of that movie saying how much fun they had.
Yeah, it's exact. I think the comparison to Mamma Mia, I mean, and I'm not, I don't think I'm just saying it because I said that before, but I mean, that's the best comparison because yeah, Mamma Mia is entertaining for people that love Mamma Mia because they have great songs and they're clever with the way they make music videos, but it's just music videos strung along. Like you've got ABBA, you've got ABBA, you've got Mamma Mia, and then here you have Queen with Bohemian Rhapsody. They're a great band with great music, and so you make a bunch of music video montages, and 30 minutes of it is just a recreation of a concert. That's not a movie. It's a, you know, it's just frustrating.
And it's a shot for shot recreation.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like they were going outside the scope of what actually happened. They were, you know, it's like Zack Snyder doing Watchmen.
Yeah, one third.
As much as I like Watchmen, he stretched himself.
And it's recreating like the same like camera angles and everything from the original Live Aid. So it's not even like
artistic.
They didn't like, hey, let's, you know, make you feel like you're on stage or whatever. It was like, let's recreate Live Aid shot for shot. And
it's crazy that they're going to put the performance on the DVD.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you understand how this works.
So it's just kind of a cluster, and it's just one more reason why people, I mean, if they're already not mad about the Oscars enough, and we talked about it last week, it's like now people are like, seriously, if you're going to give all these high awards to Bohemian Rhapsody, and people are really...
And then you've got the whole Bryan Singer problem.
Right, that's on top of all that, yeah.
Yeah, the fact that he was even mentioned for Guardians 3... blows my mind.
No way.
Is that real? I thought that was a joke.
Yeah, I don't think.
All I saw was the headline, and I didn't even bother clicking it because I couldn't believe that it could have been real.
Yeah, it's not.
I think that was tongue in cheek of like, okay, oh, James is too controversial. Let's get somebody like
yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense. All I saw was like him with the Guardians. I was like, nope. I'm not going to look at it. I'm not even going to bother with
it. Yeah. So,
but I did like that. What's it that Taika Waititi said?
No. I know. I retweeted that too. I'm like, he's awesome. That dude's great. He's like, nope, that's James' movie. End of story.
That's James' movie.
But
I'll go do something else.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, Cold Pursuit, definitely not what they were expecting or hoping for. So we'll see what that, it'll be interesting in coming weeks to see what it does, but not helped by Liam Neeson's remarks, certainly.
Next week is Battle Angel and Happy Death Day to You. Like, those are two.
Yeah, it's done.
I don't know what Battle Angel is going to do, but I think Happy Death Day is going to pull a big chunk of that away from both those movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's done. It will be interesting to see how far it drops. But let's talk about a movie that is making money. Have you guys heard of The Upside, starring Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart?
I believe that didn't Styx pay $4 million?
Yeah, I believe they paid $4 million, and in week five, it made $7 million.
That's insane.
Oh, my God. 19% drop in week five brings The Upside to $85.5 million domestic and other six overseas. We're approaching $100 million. We're at $90 million on a $37 million budget, but it doesn't matter to STX. They paid four.
Yeah. They were just happy if it made seven.
Yeah. I mean, I know hindsight's 20/20, but damn it, I'm so mad we didn't pull together $4 million. We would be.
Thanks, patron users.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
But anyway, so good for that movie. And I mean, Tom talked about it, and you probably heard about it on our previous episodes. But, you know, it's a good little feel good movie that people wanted to see, and they showed up with their wallets. So good for that one.
I wonder what else of the Weinsteins is floating around out there.
I'm sure STX is looking to see.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Like, how much you want for that? I'll give you $3 million, maybe.
Have you heard of the STX brothers?
Yes. Yeah. It's the new company by, you know, Rob and
Harveldo Weinstein. Yeah.
And Robert Weinstein. Yeah.
Well,
it's the same name, Bob. Nah, you don't know.
Robert Weinstein.
completely different guy.
So coming in at number five, Glass, another movie that's plugging along here, and we talked about that 4 weeks ago. It's still sticking around with $6 million this week. 37% drop brings that to almost $100 million. It's at $98 million domestic and overseas $111 million. So again, it's that 50-50 split almost. That's up to 205, probably a little over 210 after this weekend worldwide, and that's on a $20 million budget.
If you can self-finance your own stuff and you're going to get a $200 million return on it, I feel like that's, you know, there's a reason. Maybe he's partnered up with Blumhouse.
I do feel good for him, especially with this movie too, because I mean, the guy's taken a lot of flack, and we've talked about it. He doesn't lose a lot of
well-deserved flack.
Well, yeah, but you know, he does his job. He doesn't lose money for anyone that invests in these movies. He never loses money, and you know, he's had some really great ideas, and you know, he went through this fallow period, and lately, I mean, he's come out of it with these three movies that have all worked, all made money, and I just feel good for the guy. Like, he's a talented dude. I'm glad he's back on the right track.
Yeah, and Blumhouse is doubling down on him. Like, they're, you know, I feel like they don't have any like top tier directors. They just kind of have like journeymen,
sure,
with the exception of probably James Wan, I guess.
But yeah, they just pick the person for the job, and they, you know, if
they're doing the Marvel thing,
yeah,
honestly,
and if they're
actually kind of doing the Corman thing,
yeah,
that is very, yes, that's exactly what it is. And now he's got the Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge, huge get for him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's
time that they do that.
Yeah,
they give it.
Yeah,
to them.
I mean, we willed that into existence. We said that probably years ago. Like, well, give them.
We've been on a roll. We said that they should give the Universal Monsters to Blumhouse, and then last week on our Deep Fried Tacos, we talked about MacGruber, and then we see that they're working on rebooting that property.
I did see that, and I was like, damn it, Tom.
And then last night, we see that there's talks of trying to do a Grandma's Boy sequel.
Do we have a direct pipeline to Hollywood? Yes, like, he's not kidding. Like,
are we getting paid for this?
Seriously, how does last week two out of four of our movies are like, we talk about how much we love them, and then they're like, hey, reboots and sequels.
Yeah. And honestly, I think Switch would be a great movie to try and remake in today's Me Too era. I think you could make
really
great movie out of that.
Yeah.
That's a good, not Action Jackson.
Oh.
You think you pick like normal, it's pretty crappy.
Yeah,
but so at least on the upside, there won't be a Monster Squad reboot.
Oh, thank
that's not even a joke.
And failing is the key.
Failing, yeah. You know, they've already made perfection. What more could they do? Just leave it alone.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on.
But no, like, yeah. But Blumhouse, I think now he wants Friday the 13th.
Dude, give Blumhouse.
I mean, if I'm Universal, I'm just like, okay.
Give him whatever he wants. Like, the thing, whatever. You can clearly see that Jason Blum is not interested in failing. He's not interested in tarnishing his good name. Like, he's built this reputation more often than not. Like, most of the time, he is successful, not just in box office, but making quality films. Like,
this dude
knows what he's doing, and he is pretty much being handed the keys to any kingdom he wants. And, you know, if he keeps it up.
He wants one big key. And I think he's got
it. I mean, could you imagine?
I mean, like, what other keys could you possibly, if you're a horror guy and it's obvious, and you know what, honestly, maybe he's not. Maybe he just figured out the formula to make horror movies in Hollywood. It's like, there was a point in the early 2000s where companies were just dumping money into horror movies and they would never recoup the budget because they were ballooned so big. Mm-hmm. When he comes in and does Paranormal Activity for $25,000 and it makes, you know, over $100 million, if not more. And people are just like, oh, yeah, that's the way they used to do it. And it worked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the Friday the 13th movies, as garbage as they were, they cost like $2 to $3 million and they made 7 or 8 or 10.
Even those Universal Monster movies, those were B movies. Like, those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those weren't big, giant A-list. That's why you don't see real movie stars in them. You see people who became cult movie stars, but you don't, you know, you never saw, you know, a Jimmy Stewart in a movie like that, you know.
Was Lon Chaney Jr. really not a star?
He was more of a character actor, wasn't he? Like, I mean, he popped up in things, but he wasn't like, you know, like, you're not going to get a Cary Grant or a Clark Gable or, you know, the real stars of that era. It was kind of second tier stuff.
Clint Eastwood.
On a good day.
In the third one, not even in the first one.
Right.
They get the guy from Saw. Like, that's the guy they have to write and direct The Invisible Man, I think is what they're doing, without Johnny Depp. Just like, get rid of all of that crap. And that dude from Saw, I mean, he wrote Upgrade, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, he's also the one. What's the other movie they just gave that dude?
They did Escape from New York.
Yeah, he has been given the okay to work on the reboot of that. So it's like, this guy knows. I mean, he's James Wan's writing partner.
He wrote Saw. He was the co-creator of Saw.
I mean, he clearly knows what he's doing, and so it'll be interesting to see what that turns into, and if he forges his way to a name like James Wan has eventually.
Sure. Did you know there was a third Escape from New York?
No. What was it supposed to be?
Escape from the World.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know. There's no real details, just that like there was a working title and Kurt Russell and John Carpenter were both in.
You know why it didn't happen? Escape from L.A.
That's probably true.
As long as they don't play basketball.
Oh, I mean, it's no Catwoman scene, but yeah.
I'll watch the basketball scene in Escape from L.A. over the Catwoman basketball scene any day.
Clearly, yeah. Talk about editing.
Clearly. Jeez. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Coming in at number six is actually, speaking of horror films, there's one opening called The Prodigy that made $5.4 million, and it's only on a $6 million budget, so it's following that kind of formula. What do we know about this? I don't know anything.
Evil kid.
Yeah.
It's an evil kid. That's as far as I can get
you. Evil kid movie. Okay.
It's a bad, you know, and those always, they are what they are. Sometimes they're really good. Sometimes they're, you know, Children of the Corn 4. But it looked interesting. It's like the kid's just a, you know, it kind of looks like The Omen, but the remake of The Omen, not the good one. Hey,
you know, I'm reading the synopsis here. It starts with, get this, Sarah and John Bloom.
Hey!
Oh, they had to have known what they were doing there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's hilarious. Sarah and John Bloom are thrilled when their young son Miles starts to show signs of rapid development and extreme intelligence. Their family bliss soon turns to a living nightmare when Miles' behavior becomes increasingly erratic and violent by his 8th birthday. After seeking help from two experts, Sarah is horrified to learn that her beloved prodigy may be under the grip of a dark and supernatural force.
All right, whatever.
So,
I mean, I'm always, you know, it's a horror.
Yeah.
Movie. I'll catch it when it comes out on VHS.
Yeah, so you'll have to let us know how that is. But, I mean, it made about $6 million on its $6 million budget, and that's just domestic. So, hey, I mean.
I really wonder what that evil Superman budget is.
Yeah, I don't know. Well.
Like, I'm curious as to what they're, like, how far they're going to go with that budget, you know? Like, if they're going to keep it, like, let your mind figure out what he's doing, or if they're actually going to show him, like, you know.
I'm sure
being a jerk.
I'm sure that it's going to be on par with what was that Office movie that James Gunn produced?
Belko experiment.
I mean, again, it's James Gunn producing it. He's not directing it. So I'm guessing it's.
That was a fun movie.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. But like Belko experiment, guess the budget on that if you had to say.
$5 million.
Yeah. So
it was. I mean, it's you know, no big actors set in a. Office building.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, so I'm guessing they're going to do something in that $5 to $10 million arena, and yeah, we'll see what happens. But coming in at number 7, Green Book, still sticking around with the Oscar buzz, taking small drops. It made $3.5 million, which is a 19% drop, bringing it to $61.4 million domestic. As of right now, we've got about 25 overseas, so we're approaching $90 million worldwide on a $23 million budget. And I mean,
that guy's all over the place.
Which one?
The main guy,
Mahershala Ali. Person. Oh, because he's doing True Detective. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Now and then he's got Battle Angel coming out next week.
Yeah. So I mean, the thing with Green Book is it's getting a lot of buzz for Oscars, and so a lot, you know, there's who's going to win the Oscar at this point is anyone's guess. Nobody knows, but it's like you've got Green Book for Best Picture, you've got, you know, Mahershala, you've got Viggo Mortensen as a front runner for Best Actor, and like, so people are saying it's going to be Rami. Oh no, it might be Viggo. Like it's really hard to say at this point, but a lot of people are saying, well, the Academy might be leaning more towards Viggo as a winner. So
are they not looking at Christian Bale at all?
No, he's in the running too. But you know, so it's really hard to say who's gonna win, but Green Book's still making a ton of money. And you know, the thing is, I don't know if you realized, but that movie is directed by Peter Farrelly
of the Farrelly brothers.
Yes.
Oh
no, like, it's no one's talking about it, and rightfully so. I don't think you naturally want to attach his name, you know, just because of the movies he's made in the past. But I mean, he kind of trying to go the Adam McKay route and start to make more serious movies that still have that humor injected. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about Dumb and Dumber, There's Something About Mary, all those Farrelly brothers movies.
What was that really bad one with Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear? Stuck on You.
Yeah, so I mean, but anyway, so that may, you know, surprise some people and beat Rami and Christian Bale and you know, get a lot of the awards. So it's just really hard to say what's going to happen, but making money definitely, and you know, well surpassing its budget. So we'll see. Number 8, Aquaman, though. Speaking of Aquaman, geez, week 9, and it is coming out, I think, on Blu-ray and digital next month in March, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, they just released the details of what's going to be on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just about to drop out of the top 10, and so give it about a month to come out, and it made another $3.3 million, which is a 32% drop. It is up to $328.5 million domestic, and overseas approaching $800 million. So we're up over $1.1 billion worldwide, and we're getting a spinoff.
Yeah, what a weird, not Mira, not, you know.
Right?
The Trench. So like the creepy subatomic, or not subatomic, but like sub-level monsters.
Like, that's what happens when your movie makes $1.1 billion. Like, I thought the same thing. Like, that scene was really cool. I mean, I think it's an interesting concept. James Wan did his horror thing. It looked great. But, right, you're thinking, like, oh, we're going to get the Mira movie, and then that's, you know, get the female empowerment, and she can kick ass and all this. And it's like, there's all these characters you could choose, and it's like the Trench movie.
Right, yeah, that's what I want to see. I mean, like, it is in James Wan's wheelhouse. I get that.
But, he won't direct it, I bet. He'll produce it.
But I mean, like, he'll produce it for sure.
Yeah.
They're not going to let him go.
After this movie, the sky's the limit. If it weren't already, like, this guy's locked down.
Yeah.
You know, he's already done the Fast and Furious thing. Now he's doing Aquaman. Like, it's going to be crazy to see what he does next. But certainly,
Aquaman 2?
Yeah, I don't think it will be the Trench movie. We'll see what happens there, though. I mean, it could be really interesting. It's just a weird leap from Aquaman to that little side note.
Yeah, it's like they don't have. Okay, so they are a newer thing from the comics,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot of story to them. Like, they don't, like, what you see in Aquaman in the movie is basically all that we know.
I figured, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, but it's like, man, I haven't heard a lot of people clamoring for, oh, if this works, maybe we'll get our Trench movie.
you would think that with the
probable success of Captain Marvel, they're just going to be like, well, why don't we just make a Mira movie?
Mira's so awesome. I mean, she's so good. I mean, Atlanta's good. I mean, Nicole Kidman kicks ass in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, you've got two female characters who are awesome and just totally kick ass in that movie. So it's interesting they didn't go that route to do, like you said, to combat the Captain Marvel over there or Red Sonja, which is going to be coming out. I mean, this is the perfect place to give that kind of a spinoff. So we'll see what continues to happen. One movie that is going to get spinoffs, and I think 9 or 10 of them are greenlit now, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with another $3.2 million, a 30% drop in week 9, and $180 million domestic, and another $172 million before the weekend overseas. So $350 million on a 90. That's a win.
There is talk of rebooting the Ultimate Universe now.
Oh,
Donnie Cates, who is kind of like Marvel's newest Wonder Kid, has said in an interview, he's like, I would love to reboot the whole universe and try it again. Yeah. And I mean, like, those early Ultimate books, if you've never read them, I think they're excellent for people trying to get into comics.
Which was their whole reason for existence.
Absolutely. And they had up-and-coming talent. Like, talent who hadn't really worked on superhero books before, like Brian Bendis and Mark Bagley, who was a Spider-Man guy, Mark Miller, Andy Kubert,
and then I think it was the same creative team. I mean, so it was Spider-Man, the X-Men, the Ultimates, which is the Avengers, and then the Ultimate Fantastic Four. So it's just like, if you ever wanted to get into Spider-Man and you have no idea where to start, that's where to start.
Yeah, the Ultimates are awesome.
Oh, they've had some misses, but those four titles were amazing.
Spider-Man is great.
Oh, Ultimate Spider-Man is one of the few books that I think was good from issue one till it ended.
Yeah, I mean,
like, there are some fallow points, but they're few and far between.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely an awesome book, and you're right, a lot of that Ultimate stuff is great. So it will be interesting.
And if you like the MCU, this is where they got it.
I mean,
the Ultimates book is the Avengers.
Yeah, and especially that's on Spider-Man, Brian Michael Bendis. So, you know, he's responsible for consulting on a lot of the Marvel stuff and for Spider-Man. So they're pulling a lot of stuff from that book into the universe.
Yes.
So anyway, we'll see what happens with those, but it's making money. It will be interesting to see what spinoffs are going to come out first and what they continue to do with it. But everyone singing its praises. And rounding out the top 10, I think this is Joe's favorite movie so far of 2019, Miss Bala.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't wait.
That's isn't that Gina Carano in like a spy or some kind of action thriller type movie?
If it is, you sold me at Gina Carano.
There you go. I knew you'd be on board.
I don't think it is, though. I think this is the guy. I don't think it's Gina Carano.
It's not Gina Carano?
I don't think so.
Oh, Gina Rodriguez. Sorry.
All right.
Well, sorry. You still on board?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. I don't know much about it, but it is some kind of a thriller action movie that this is week two, actually, for this one. I guess we didn't do a box office last week, but it's a 62% drop with $2.6 million, and it's at $11.7 million domestic, and overseas, 42,000 reported. So, guessing it doesn't have too big of a rollout over there yet. That's on a $15 million budget, so... not exactly setting the world ablaze with that one. Tom, you didn't see that, did you?
I did not.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know much about it. I haven't heard anyone that's seen it, honestly. I think I saw a trailer for it before I watched something on Hulu.
Saw a trailer. It looks like one of those ones that you would catch on, like, a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. The reason I think I was thinking of, what was that Gina Carano spy movie or action spy movie?
That's Haywire, which is really good.
That's what I was thinking of, exactly. It kind of, for whatever reason, reminded me of that. And I don't know anything.
That's a Steven Soderbergh movie.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I liked it. That was good. But the director, Miss Bala's director, is Catherine Hardwicke. So, you know, she did the Twilight movie, Red Riding Hood. Do you remember that with Amanda Seyfried?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yikes, with a side of yikes.
I totally forgot that she had done that movie. The first movies that she started off doing, she did 13 with Evan Rachel Wood. I mean, that was...
Is that the one with the two girls?
Yeah, yeah.
That movie messed me up.
That was crazy. Yeah, that was a crazy movie. Like, that was her first movie. It made $10 million on a $2 million budget. And then she did Lords of Dogtown, which was praised.
Oh, that's a good movie.
That's a good movie. So then she went into the Twilight and Red Riding Hood, and she did a movie called Plush, which I've never seen. So anyway, unfortunately, it doesn't look like this will be her comeback. So she's going to have to start working for Blumhouse or something.
Yeah. I will say, Dan said that the guy that needs to be at Blumhouse is... De Palma.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, give De Palma $10 million and let him go make whatever, you know, weird drama he wants through, you know, and it'll, I feel like that's a dude that is prime for a comeback as well. Also, I'm a De Palma nerd, but
sure. Is he retired? Does he make movies anymore?
No, he's got something in the pipeline, and he just actually, if you ever see his, there's a doc, I think it's just called De Palma.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating because he poops on his own stuff.
Really?
He was like, yeah, that wasn't really a good movie. I don't know what I was thinking when I made that. We saw Black Dahlia, which is not good.
Apparently, and I maybe we just missed this one, or maybe it's not out here in the U.S. yet, but apparently Brian De Palma directed a movie called Domino with Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones.
I don't think it's out yet.
Okay, so
I think that's coming. Yeah,
that's his first since 2012 when he directed Passion.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams, Noomi Rapace.
Oh,
so yeah, I can't.
Yeah, he's a go back to his early stuff. His early stuff is great
for sure. So yeah, we'll have to see what ends up happening with that one.
But currently attached to a movie called Predator, but not the what would make
no joke. No. I think it's a remake of something.
Yeah, the description on IMDb says, described as a horror film set in Hollywood and featuring a predatory movie mogul. And I feel like Brian De Palma has been built in a lab to make that movie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
As much as he loves classic Hollywood, and then you set it against a modern topic like that could be a winner.
That could be
absolutely.
Winner.
And I mean, he did the Black Dahlia.
That movie is garbage.
Yeah.
That should have worked. Like, that the idea of De Palma doing a movie around that murder in 1930s Hollywood should have worked. But instead of focusing on the murder, he focused on everybody else, like, what it did to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Aaron Eckhart plays the detective who was, like, he goes crazy because he can't solve the case. And I was like, I don't give a crap about that guy. Like, just work up the horror, you know, like almost like Zodiac, where like they don't really tell you what happened, and there's no resolution to that movie. But it's, to me, it was so enthralling and engaging, I didn't care.
Yeah,
that's my favorite serial killer, Tom.
Well, there you go.
To go back to that discussion.
Yeah. So anyway, that is the box office.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can follow the show online at Real Spoilers on Twitter or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers. And don't forget about our Patreon account at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle Lego Movie 2, the second part. So until then, you've been warned.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.